When I was a kid, I watched old movies every afternoon on TV. And so the 1940s were the past to me, an urbane, witty, heroic, splendid-looking past where everyone smoked and joked and drank cocktails to the music of Benny Goodman or Billie Holiday. Movies like Philadelphia Story and Sullivan's Travels and Double Indemnity are still among my very favorites, as are Looney Tune cartoons and the music of Aaron Copland, the down-and-dirty tabloid photographs of Ouija and the paintings of Edward Hopper. Such a time and such irresistible nostalgia. With the current ongoing 11th-hour salute to the greatest generation in books and movies and on TV, the 1940s are now even more ever-present. My guest today to talk about this decade is filmmaker Woody Allen. He's returned repeatedly to the 1940s in his movies, from Radio Days, about growing up then, to his latest, The Curse of the Jade Scorpion, which opens around the country next week. Woody Allen, welcome to Studio 360.
Thank you.
What is it that draws you to this period, the 40s and the middle of the century in America generally?
Well, my feeling is this, and it may be over-romanticized, but the three great decades, in my own opinion, for New York City were the 20s, 30s, and 40s. I'm too young to recall the 30s, really. I was born December 1st, 1935. So I was, when 1940 hit, I was really, you know, actually just about 4 years old. And I remember the 40s firsthand, because I remember being taken to Manhattan by my parents when I was a kid.
From Brooklyn.
From Brooklyn, yeah. And it was a, you know, a half-hour subway ride or so, approximately. And when you walked up the steps at Times Square, as far as the eye could see, as you looked north and as you looked east and west at 42nd and Broadway, you saw one cinema after another, one movie house after another, and they were all lit up, and they were spectacular, and there were thousands of people in the street and tons of soldiers and sailors and Marines and these women who, at the time, I certainly thought were beautiful. They were glamorous and, as you mentioned a moment ago, smoking and with these great dresses and their hair upswept in these kind of Rita Hayworth, Betty Grable hairdos and full of lipstick. And there were guys with their back against the wall selling apparently stringless dancing dolls. And, you know, it was absolutely spectacular.
And do you think this is, was your sense at the time as a child or as a young man that this was romantic and wonderful? Or do you think this is backward looking and in retrospect you see it?
I think in retrospect. At the time, it was, to use the contemporary word, awesome to see this, but you didn't have, or I didn't have, perspective on it. I just thought that's what happened. People, you know, women languish for 40 minutes in front of their round mirrors with the light bulbs around them, and they get dressed and they flounce out, and some doorman on Park Avenue gets a taxi for a guy in a tuxedo and a woman in a great dress with a stole, and they go out to the theater and it's wonderful. And I just thought that seems to be what it's about in a certain milieu. That, you know, this was Manhattan, as I say, and I thought that's the way people lived, and many of them did.
The Curse of the Jade Scorpion is set in 1940. Were there particular films that you modeled its look or feel around?
You know, I used to like, when I was a kid, I used to like those films, first off, where men and women, the man and the woman in the film, would be at each other's throat. And you never knew how they were going to come together at the end, but you did know they would. And it could have been Rosalind Russell and Cary Grant or Claudette Colbert or Fred McMurray or you know, Tracy and Hepburn or William Powell and Carol Lombard. But they would just tear into each other for the whole picture with these superbly crafted barbs and put-downs, and each one would top the other and then get retopped, and he would retop her and she'd kill him. And at the end, they came out together, and you knew that there was real chemistry between them. But so I wanted to do that kind of a movie, and I had an idea for a long time about a film where I was a criminal and also the person trying to catch the criminal. I'd always wanted to do that as a—I just thought it was an amusing notion, but it served as an armature around which to build a movie that I could have that kind of relationship. And when Helen Hunt was available, I felt she'd be perfect for that because she is the type in real life that could come in and take over an office and revamp it and take no guff from anybody. You know, she really does have that quick wit and that strong personality. And so I thought it would be fun to do that.
She plays an efficiency expert and manager in this insurance company at which you are an investigator, not quite a private investigator, but a detective.
Insurance investigator, yeah.
There's something about that broad that I don't trust. She's got an evil streak.
You're the only person I've received this kind of bitter resistance from, and if I may speak frankly, you're a dinosaur.
So, did you tell her who's boss?
Is she kidding talking to me like that? It's because she thinks she's smarter, you know, because she graduated from Vassar, and I went to driving school.
What you really need is a good old-fashioned roll in the hay.
You wouldn't know which end is up.
Well, in your case, it would be hard to tell.
Can you imagine that film being set in another time? Did it need to happen in the 40s? Because there's a lot of, obviously, the kind of banter that your character has about the broad this or the chick or the girl over here would be, you'd be arrested if you did that in an office today, I guess. But
I think it would be tough to set it in a different place. First off, I don't think you could set it in a different era because of the hypnosis.
And your character is hypnotized to commit crimes in this film.
Right. Also, the fast-talking, quipping attitude, as you point out, in an office between the man and the woman, you know, you wouldn't see that. I mean, it's characteristic, the style of talking, the smoking the cigarettes, the hitting on the office. You know, there's a strain of chauvinism, male chauvinism, in the character I play in the movie because he's a guy that's, you know, hits on all the secretaries and pinches them at the water cooler and eventually does get put in his place by this very strong woman who comes to work there. But that was characteristic of that era.